This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU Basketball Coach Tom Izzo.
Well, it really is a pleasure to welcome Tom Izzo to our segment. Tom, you and your team were very prominent at the championship game, but we spent some time as an educational trip for your team. It wasn't just sort of going to watch a game, and so we want to talk a bit about your philosophy for that and the time at the NCAA.
Well, first, speaking of smiles, I was in that first row. And as you and Becky walked in, your smile was inevitable, too.
I was sort of pacing with my folded program for a while,
too. You were a little nervous. John Wooden, your Indiana ties, I guess. But, you know, I talked to Mark about it a couple weeks actually before the game because I had a break in the schedule. I had 10 days. We had finals coming up. It's odd. You usually plan Saturday, and we didn't play till Wednesday, so we were able to get some things done. But I looked at it about a threefold way. I said it'd be a team building. Just spend some time with the players in a bus. You don't get to do that as much anymore. Number two, when both of you hooked us up at the NCAA office, I thought that was a very good situation. We got to be down there. I was interested to see how the players, probably wanted to jump on the NCAA for the things and then started learning a little bit. I thought you did a great job in talking to them and to the NCAA and you kind of mediated between the two. And then, when you go to big events, like we've been to Final Fours and that, you never get to enjoy them because you're working. And the players even don't get to enjoy them because they got pressure. So getting 3 hours to just walk around the city and kind of see all the Spartan fans go to that pep rally with 3,500, 4,000 people was great. And then it culminated with the game. And I told my players, I want them to see and learn how to win a championship. And that's what you do. And I was based it on defense and toughness. And I don't think there's any question that's how we won that game. And my favorite moment was when I said at 20-12, watching you and Becky down there and everybody get around. And I said, come on, guys, let's go and we'll beat the traffic. I said, no, coach, we got to stay for the ceremony. We got to wait. And so we waited another 45 minutes and enjoyed every single second and watching players grab flags and from the cheerleaders and wave them. And it was just, it was worth every single minute.
I think when I step back and look at that whole day, a couple things that stood out to me is one, the representatives from the NCAA presented themselves in a very humanistic way.
Yes.
Plus to have a collection of student athletes from other sports join you and to watch the interaction between those groups. And the third was to see the football team immediately after the game to know exactly where your guys, the basketball team, was at and virtually make a beeline over there to high-five and thank them for coming. It really demonstrated that the team is bigger than the team. And
Team MSU, as our president says.
And just throughout that whole day, it was interesting to kind of sit back and watch it happen right before our eyes.
Yeah. I agree, and you bring up the other sports, and sure enough, I told my guys, I want you sitting at different tables, meeting some new people, and then what happens is they're walking around the city together, and so it was. If there was a perfect scenario and a perfect way to end it, thanks to you guys, thanks to Mark D'Antonio, we batted 1,000. I did enjoy watching those last 3 minutes where people were down there and. I enjoyed the nervousness, the excitement, and maybe even a half tear of joy. All those things combined and watching Mark. And I had a bird's eye seat watching my players, watching Mark D'Antonio.
We've all, in a sense, had the privilege, I would say, of being in winning and losing locker rooms, watching, the interactions. I've watched you watch Mark in various sessions. Mark and I have been there. And the dynamics of players, coaches, people, that's really when families come together in some ways.
Well, it really is. And I do remember every Final Four, Big Ten tournament games, when it comes down to those 1 point, 2 points, one field goal, one not. And and it is appreciated. You know, I think players realize too when your AD and your president are there, and sometimes your board's members are. You know, I remember at winning that first game in Detroit, and you and Magic and all the different people, and it, you know, it just kind of lets the players know that number one, there's support from top to bottom, which I think is incredible, and you've been there through a lot of tough losses in those Final Fours too, and believe it or not, I think every coach would agree that is more important to the coach. You know, I mean, there's you're already feeling so down, and the players are, and to know that people care one way or another, appreciate where you've gotten people to. I mean, there's only going to be one winner, and that's the way it is in sports.
When you go through some of this, it's you know, I always say it's tougher to lead when you're in the midst of success. We've made comments.
We're feeling that right now, aren't we?
Well, I think, yeah. And I think you can feel that in small windows, and I think you can feel it in large windows. It's, you know, you beat Kentucky, and that has a different impact on the flow for the rest of the season. You go to a Rose Bowl, that has an impact of many individuals wanting to be in the role to make decisions and pull you in different directions. And it's interesting to watch. And I think great success comes from, you know, staying true to your values and your mission on where you're headed from the beginning. But it's more difficult to win.
You know, it's funny that it was the day of our North Carolina game, and Mark came over to my office. And I said, hey, you didn't come on. You know, he came over to wish me luck. I said, you didn't have to come over. You could have called. You know, he said, no, I had to get out of my office. He goes, man, I don't know how you do it. You know, this, it's just a different animal, the media attention, the alumni attention. There's just so many different things that if you haven't gone through it, it's hard to explain. And it ties up your days. And he says, you know, I got to make sure I stick with my offensive unit, stick with my defense. I got to get to those meetings. But it's part of what you learn. You know, then yesterday, we were talking about, you know, some things, too, as far as how you handle it, you know. And I don't know if you ever get great at it, but it's fun trying to get great at having too much success.
And there's levels of success. There's the game, there's the season, there's the program, and then there's the university. And then you can even go beyond that. It's what level of success do you really want to entrench in your fiber?
Well, that's what's cool for, I think, the three of us, you know, more so. President Simon and I, because we've been here longer than you.
But, we've been here a long time.
Yeah, but when you do that, you definitely go from when you come into a place, you're worried about your program. And then I think the best compliments anybody can get is whether you care about all the other things. And for the two of us and you now, all kidding aside, it's the program, the athletic department, the university, and even our community.
Yeah.
And you know, in Detroit that year, even our state, you know, it was kind of interesting what an impact you can have on so many different people.
And I think it's true in many ways, whether it's the rivalry between the University of Michigan and Ohio State. But I know we had lots and lots of Wolverines who were rooting for Spartans.
Yeah. I know that's a little scary for them, but I have to agree. You know, I always laugh about that because I think they dislike them more than us. And so that's the way it is in sports.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and MSU Basketball Coach Tom Izzo.
Hey, let me bring you two back, you know, when we made the announcement about John L.'s transition and looking for a new coach, there were a bunch of skeptics who were not convinced we could do it right. They'd seen the program really harkening back for a very long time, not having stability. And that it was really, you know, it was sort of Mark's in-basket test and leadership we're able to convince you to be a part of the search process in a very direct way, even though it was in season and it was really hard for you to take all the time. So you want to reflect back on sort of that time, and because I think for me that was one of the transformative moments.
Well, I think
for the institution and how we sort of went about doing this.
I think you gave Mark a test that time. You know,
it was
what
in
you
basket
did.
Test.
I liked it. It was pressure on, but. First of all, for me, it wasn't hard work. It was a privilege to be a part of it. It really was. And I got to, you know, I mean, it wasn't a ton of time for me. I spent a couple of lunch times at your house, and we talked about some things. We talked on the phone.
And you traveled around a bit.
Traveled around a little bit after a couple games. But, yeah. You know, I was impressed with the job Mark did. I mean, you know, the hardest part for me was reading through the 10 million pieces of information that he gathered on every human being. You know, I really didn't
those spreadsheets?
Yeah. I didn't enjoy D'Antonio's best friend in third grade and his girlfriend in fourth. You know, that didn't seem to have an impact at the time, but that's, I think, how thorough he was.
I think the thing that really resonated with me was President Simon said, don't pick who you want, pick what you want. And mm-hmm. that kind of set the tone for how to go through the process. It was establishing criteria of if you in your mind close your eyes and vision the perfect person. What do they look like? What are they? What have they done? And we went through all those different variables, as you remember, of backgrounds and what side of the ball, where are they from, where did they grow up, what points of contact. And it was really about fit. I mean, so many times you can be the greatest coach in the world, and it's about fit. It's about do they fit in the environment that you're going to place them into. And, you know, that's where we spent a lot of time, but it was one of much communication, much research, a lot of collaboration, and in the end, allowing the process to follow those characteristics that we established.
You know what I was most impressed with as I look back now and I see searches in different places and things like that? We wavered a few times, but we withstood the media blitz and the pressure. Mm-hmm. And you guys withstood that. I didn't have to withstand any of that. But as we all know, you know, Mark was, and that's what we liked about him. He would not interview until he got done with his season, and that created a little bit of problem for everybody. You know,
it
you
did,
get
because
nervous.
There's a point at which you want to say, "I want to be done with this."
No, hey, after all his notes, so did I.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't want to rerun more spreadsheets.
I
one
think
more piece
that's
of information
was impressive to me as I look back. You know, I saw on ESPN. I talked to Mark. I tried to talk to Narduzzi about, you know, his situation there and the way it was handled. From what they told me, I just laughed. I said, you know, it was like, try to strong arm fast, you know, do it this way. I thought you guys handled it classy, well thought up, and
the two other pieces I throw in there was having Alan Heller on the group as an individual who played in the league and played at Michigan State and could sit there and at the end could say, I could play for that guy, or this guy could motivate me in this way, or you know, I didn't really see through this guy as being able to connect with student athletes. You know, I thought his resource was tremendous. The other piece was our whole staff. You know, once you hire somebody, it's not, okay, go do your job. It's making sure resources are in place for them to be effective in doing their job. And those coaches came here and they had, you know, the cars, the phones, everything was in place the second that they arrived, which was virtually that day.
After they had to take their NCAA test.
After they took their test. But even that point, that was ready to go. It was our staff did as good a job as I've ever seen of a transition coming in and within hours having them prepared to be out on the road recruiting and doing good for Michigan State.
Yeah, one of my favorite memories is the after we got through all of that, we did the announcement. Two things. Roy went, because I had to meet with the board. And so Roy went in the locker room when Mark met with the team. And he came back so impressed.
Really?
Because it was about this quiet confidence that we've come to sort of appreciate.
Yeah.
And you know, he had his national championship ring on, and he said, this is where we're going to go. But it was that kind of common, and he went around in that wry smile of his and met, you know, every kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's the name of the game. You said it earlier, you know, state of the course. You've said it a million times in your management of this university. I mean, it's hard to do when you get a lot of people pecking at you. And I said to him yesterday, you know, he's given me a lot of credit from learning from what we did and how we built it. And, you know, 4 years we were in a Final Four, and 5 years we win the national championship. And, you know, when you think about in 7 years what he's accomplished here in football, which we all agree, football and hockey are a little harder to get there quicker.
Yeah.
You know, hockey is too. I help them in recruiting some. It's amazing. They don't even know when they're getting their guys because of this junior hockey and this. And that's a more difficult – football's a little bit more difficult way to do it. And the way he's done in a short period of time, the way he's – you know, handled some things, and you know, I'm excited for all of us because I think we're a good four person team, and then you know, and just what's happened is happening. You know, all of a sudden our volleyball team's winning, and you know, our soccer team's in the Elite Eight. I mean,
field hockey made it cross country.
You know,
volleyball.
You just see, and that's kind of what happens, and it usually. It bonds a university.
Now, I did promise that we would look at the air handling in basketball, given the injury pattern of both the women's and the men's basketball team. There must be something over there that's causing us to have some difficulty.
You know, I talked to Susie last night. She told me a story that she went and saw a recruit and in Ohio, and she drove 4 hours, and 3 minutes into the game, the girl blew her Achilles. And I've never seen anything like it, and they do unbelievable things. You know, in women's sports, that's a more common injury. We've had some nicks. Unfortunately, you know, we went really well. And that's usually the difference between great seasons and not. You know, if you look at Mark's season, his key people have stayed pretty injury-free. The year before, you know, you have a lot of injuries. That's just the nature of the beast. But I don't think it's anything with the building or our people or anything we're doing. It's just...
Sometimes it happens.
And but, you know, I mean, you look at the year she was having, and I still think she will if she gets a couple of those girls back. It's just been fun to be a part of Team MSU.
Yeah. But I think to talk about basketball, and you've been around lots of places across the country, the relationship here, not just with you and Mark over the two high-profile sports, but with Tom, and as you said, you recruited him. Tom called Roy because he said that the kid that we saw when he was first appointed, who was 15, is now coming because that's when you have to sort of recruit hockey players. We finally are going to get one because he went to high school and played juniors, and now he's going to come at a skill level that will make a difference in the program. But the relationships are really unusual here, not simply among you, between you and Mark, but with everybody. With Susie, I know you were over. We cheered Jake's success. We're anguishing over with Jackie. You know, I know you talked to Kathy over volleyball. It just is I think people don't know how unusual that is in athletic departments. And it really comes from Mark's leadership and the kind of tone he set for the department.
Well, they always say, you know, how the head goes, the body goes. And I laugh because I'm on a lot of boards like you are with the NCAA or with the Coaches Association. And we'll sit in meetings and they'll say, well, you got to talk to your president about this. And 90% of the guys raise their hand. What do you mean? I can't never talk to my president. So first of all, we have an open door policy with you, even to the point where we meet, you know, once every couple of months, which has been awesome. And then Mark is very hands-on. You know, he's not forgotten his managerial stint here and has an appreciation for the ground floor of things. And, you know, even when we get to the Rose Bowl, he knows how important it is to me. He knows what that means, you know, trying to get a game out in Staples Center and get a game moved.
We made an effort.
A big effort. And you know, you think about those things, and, of course, I've got all those, some would say corny, I would say memory-making events that he's put together. And, you know, still to this day, I mean, I come in here and I just signed a picture of the aircraft carrier game, you know, that has an imprint on people's minds forever that are Spartans. I was talking to a guy in California the other day when you're coming back out for another one, you know, there's things we get to do here. And really, honestly, I don't need to pat anybody's back anymore, but you have done a great job of being accessible. Presidents aren't accessible. Mark has been a great help in and helping us all, and, you know, calling me up and, hey, our volleyball team just did this, give her a call, you know, do boom, 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 staying on top of every sport. And one of my biggest joys in this job is when Anastas calls, I got a top kid up, can you give me 20 minutes to, you know, or Jackie or our women's golf. I mean, I think I'm a part assistant there. And those are privileges and honors. They're not burdens. They're privileges.
I also need to say that I called you up because we had a major donor in economics. and so I think and you readjusted your schedule. He's a person
and
that...
And he called me yesterday, by the way.
I'm sure he did. He's become your new best friend. But he's not been around. He sort of wasn't connected with the university. Now reconnecting. And you spent a bit of time with him. And that was very helpful in getting him back to really thinking about Michigan State.
Well, I think that's where we all kind of agree that there is a bigger picture than basketball athletics. It's, I mean, we are part of the family, and that's what makes it hard for all of us or any of us to leave. You get ingrained in it, and the only bone I have to pick with you is throwing me out in front of those students that day and having them boo me because I'm trying to get them out of the arena. But the boos turned to cheers, and we all had a good time. Well, and that's one of my best times I've had.
Look up, and there's Rocky and Katie are two of the ones.
Yeah.
I was glad you got out there because I could see them on the monitor. I thought to myself, if I don't get Tom's kid out of there, I'm going to be in trouble forever, you know. And we tried everything we do.
The sad part is she was one booing.
No, but that's the kind of thing because, you know, and you did get a lot of kids out of there, and the ones that were sort of remaining were in fact going to move when they saw the lightning come a little bit closer to the thing, but they wanted to keep their seats, and including your daughter.
Which you got to love in a way, but I just thought that was another way of you thinking ahead of the curve, you know, and I mean, they're just little things like that we do, and I say this all the time. When a recruit comes in, especially of a different sport, I say, you know, go to the weight room, go to the Smith Center, you know, walk the campus, ask questions, and see if all these people are still going to be that way at other schools. You know, I always tell the story, Ryan Miller stopped by my place one time when I hardly even knew Ryan Miller, and he was asking me questions about how I get a kid to make free throws because he couldn't see the puck. Here he's an Olympic goalie now, and he couldn't see the puck, and we just sat there and talked, and I don't think you get that other places. I know, because I'm in those meetings, you don't get access to your president in other places. I know I have to be ginger and watch how I say it, but I say you're the best athletic president because you try to get to events, but you try to get to plays and concerts and all the different, the new art museum. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many things. I think I'm busy, and then I look across the river and I say, not that busy.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and MSU Basketball Coach Tom Izzo.
Both you and I would agree that we're so fortunate that Mark passed his inbox test and hiring a football coach. but it's very unusual to have somebody who's super creative, Mark is, and be able to think about things organizationally as well as sort of worry through the details. And I know that worry through those details with a strong value framework. It's just not, let's find the easiest path to this, but really worrying about it from a values framework. And it puts a lot of pressure on you because I know you do that. Sometimes I wonder why you don't go home when a kid needs to talk. You're always there. Same way with Mark and in terms of the way in which he cares for the athletic department and the university. So we're really fortunate. And going back to Mark Hollis's comment earlier, it was about fit with Mark D'Antonio. Mm-hmm. Because you have to have somebody who really appreciates all those little things and wants to be a part of that team. And if they do, there's a reason to stay, not a reason to go.
Well, and I think the cool thing for the three of us is – you went from provost to president. There were a lot of doubters. There were question marks, you know. Then I go from assistant, never be a head coach, to head coach. A lot of doubters and question marks. And you put Mark through the ringer, you know.
Yeah.
But you look, as I said, top to bottom, you know, everybody does their job, to use a Bill Belichick line. If you do your job, you made him earn his spot. I think I was made to earn my spot. There's no question the years you put in here, you earned your spot. And I think we all appreciate it. But I said I have one of the more accessible presidents, and I have one of the more innovative ADs. And how are you going to beat that? You know, we get a chance. I'm not sure there's a question I'd ask them that I'd ever hear no. I was here, let me look into it. Let me see. Let me find out. Let me do this. That's enjoyment. You know, a lot of times now you hear no because people are too lazy to really, as you say, go through that process.
Let me ask this question. I mean, I appreciate the comments that are made about the whole department and university. In our industry right now, we're being defined by so many different people, by media, by donors, by supporters, by when I talk about industry, I'm talking about intercollegiate athletics. As a president, if you were to make a comment on the values of intercollegiate athletics and what it means, do you believe it's being fairly defined by those that have the voice or the microphone? Or more specifically, how do you view the values in what we do?
What I've said to people is I'm the president for sport. College sport for the 99%.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Because 99% of the student athletes who participate in our programs are there for a mixture of being a student and using athletics as a vehicle for expressing their passion, as a vehicle for continuing to hone their leadership skills, as a vehicle for engagement and the opportunities to do lots of different things and enrich their college experience, to do outreach and engagement, to do a whole set of things. And even with our student athletes, the 99%, you know, they talk to other students. They're engaged in activities with other students. It's harder for them on study abroad, to use that as an example, mm-hmm. because of the expectations of their sport. But it's also really hard for students that we have who are very middle class, who are working too many hours. So I want to be the president and the spokesperson for the 99%. Mm-hmm. Because the 1% that gets all the attention isn't the definition of college sport. And the more we let the media, let our donors, let everyone else see college sport through the eyes of the 1%. And then we really lost the high ground for college sport. And so and if you think about basketball or football, you know, I think it's outrageous that kids can't go to be pro whenever they want to. Mm-hmm. Lots of problems would be solved that mm-hmm. way.
And I think Tom, in his pursuit of one shining moment, Tom's everyday life is following the exactly. objectives
no,
that
I
you
mean,
just set out.
And I think that if I were to poll people in athletics outside of three or four media people, that the people who are in the business, so to speak, in the enterprise, believe that.
Yep. I got in this business for the right reasons, and it's a pursuit to make sure that those right reasons are still at the forefront right. of what we all do. And every person that I've ever been associated with Michigan State has that same
right.
belief.
And the other thing I said some of this the other thing I object to, which is the other side of people talking about this in the corporate model, and if this were the corporate model. You know, and you think about having a variety of teams that are in different media markets and therefore different revenue sources. The minimum contract is the same across all of those teams, whether they're in a really big market or a really small market. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, what we've chosen to do in college sport is recognize that there are different revenue sources, but that every student athlete, regardless of whether you're in soccer or basketball or football, sort of starts out with the same level of support. We provide the same level of support in the Smith Center. We provide the same level of support that if you were to pay for it is extraordinary in terms of health care. We provide, mm-hmm. we try to provide the same level and quality of coaching and experience and nutrition. And we give them the same books, and we give them the same apparel. Housing allotment. We give them the same apparel. You know, so for us, we're very much like that big corporation where it has one more profitable division than another, but everybody who begins our process is treated the same. Our challenge is that when people get better, so to speak, they can't go on and do what they choose to do.
Well, I think when we were at the NCAA offices, and you were kind of one of the lead speakers because you are on the boards now that put you high up. But I thought our players, and I thought the other athletes that were there from different sports, you merged that together very well that day. And I think our guys got a different appreciation because we are one of the haves, it seems like.
Yeah, we are.
You know, especially in basketball and football, it seems that – but you kind of painted it a little differently to show just – how many things we do get when you start talking academics and healthcare and the uniforms and the this and the that. And that was good.
And I think also that one of the great things, as Mark mentioned earlier, is we did have students from other sports from our Student Athlete Advisory Council who had that experience. It wasn't just the basketball players. Right. And I think that interaction is really important. We do some of that because of the Smith Center. Many places segregate the academic support for their high-profile sports.
Mm-hmm. Many places segregate the teams. I think what you said, you know, when you keep talking about Team MSU when you got here, I mean, I have felt Michigan State is an incredible place for that. I mean, I've never seen a place where so many of the sports. Yes, I have. In Division II when I was there because everybody was just trying to do it to survive. But here when you can be selfish and this guy's getting more money and this program's getting this and that, there is a bond here that, boy, if we ever lose that, that's the day I hope I walk out the door because it's special.
I agree.
It is, and I think it helps us because we in the world of big places that we're trying to compete against, we're low-resourced. I mean, so everybody has somebody that they're trying to compete with. And we're in the league that we're playing in a low resource program. In if you look at around the rest of the state, it's take Michigan on one side, but everybody else, we're a high resource program.
Right.
But that spirit is in part what has helped us to be successful. And I still may get my Rhodes Scholar out of football here.
Mm-hmm. Hope so.
Yeah. I hope so. That's the Rose Bowl and Rhodes Scholar. That's what I'm looking for.
That would be fabulous. Yeah. He's such a good young man, and we hope that happens.
Tom, thanks for spending time with us.
This is fun. I could do this every week or two. This is kind of a fun thing, and it gives you a chance to appreciate everybody. And this is what I mean. How many ADs, basketball coaches get to sit with their president and have a radio show? And
it's quite the honor.
If it gets much better, it will be the new Howard Stern or something before we're done.
It's fun because we're friends, you know? And our goal is to sit with each other when we're no longer doing these jobs and make sure the Spartans are as successful then as they are now because we're laying a foundation. And we just want to be there to watch that.
That's what I always say. We're friends, but we also have the ability to keep each other humble and motivate each other when we're down.
You mean
and
the time when Tom—
And accountable.
And accountable.
We have to be because we owe it to one another and we owe it to sport.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
That was MSU basketball coach Tom Izzo talking with Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University president Luana K. Simon. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a real pleasure to join the Simon Hollis Show for this interview, President Simon. I've talked to you on Greening of the Great Lakes, but now I get to join you as on your own show.
It's fun. I mean, it's really terrific. And in talking about winning, it's important that we win by being green in lots of ways. And so that's why your program, Kurt, is very important to us, as we started that with OJR, but also a chance to talk with Mark and Jennifer a bit about our efforts to make the world a little greener place, not just through athletics.
Well, what a great segue. And the Jennifer and Mark that President Simon is referring to, Jennifer Battle is the Director of Campus Sustainability for Michigan State University. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And we have Mark Schupan, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Schupan & Sons, that's headquartered in Kalamazoo and a very loyal partner to Michigan State University. Mark, glad you could make it.
I also appreciate the opportunity today. Thank you.
Let's have you both talk a little bit about the relationship between Schupan and Michigan State University.
Well, Michigan State University and Schupan have been working together, particularly on game day recycling, and they've been an excellent partner. Schupan has been responsible for sponsoring a lot of the educational messages about recycling and waste reduction at the stadium, and they've also been really great in providing both guidance on our recycling containers and also providing recycling containers for the tailgate areas. So they've been really great partners. Sometimes you've seen their trucks and advertising encouraging people to recycle. So it's really helping reinforce our Be Spartan Green message about waste reduction, sustainability, and helping people enjoy the game too.
We're primarily, our company is pretty diversified, but we're large in the industrial side. We do about 800 different industrial plants. We do their recycling in the Midwest. But as far as my connection with Michigan State, it goes back to 1966 as a freshman. So I do bleed green, and I had a son that went here also.
You were just post one of those Rose Bowls, right?
I actually, the last Rose Bowl we went to, I promised my family that we just had a three-month-old at the time. Mm-hmm. And so my wife did not go, and I said, I'll promise you, the next time we go, I'll take everybody. So I can tell you, we are going this year.
So here we are.
Here we are.
My three-month-old, I think, is 26 now. But at any rate, I talked about an opportunity. When we got started with this, Tom Emmerich has been very instrumental in Roger also, who you had a few times, has done a great job for us. And the idea, again, is we talk about doing the right thing. And if you look at whether it be global or local or whatever, in order to have the sustainability of recycling, the effort has to come, basically has to come from everybody. And the commitment that Michigan State has, from any time they learn something, they implement it. And so it just keeps getting better and better. And really, they're doing the job. We have a little advice here and there, but the real credit should go to the commitment that Michigan State has to do the right thing.
Just talk a bit about your company and how it's grown over the last 10 years or so, and what it means, because you're a company that means that recycling is not only good for the environment, but it's good for business.
Well, again, we this is our 45th year. Yeah. I kid people. I say I have been there 39 years, so I always say I reached my level of incompetency very early. I was president at 26. But, again, when we got involved, it's nice to say, hey, I'm in a business that is green and does good things, and you can feel good about it. Our employees feel good about what they do. The businesses we have the industrial recycling, primarily aluminum is our real forte. And if you look at what we do, we literally ship in recyclables, 1 million pounds every day of recyclables from some, whether it be aluminum, steel, PET, glass. So every day it's a busy day. Now, we also distribute aluminum. We have three warehouses that do that, one in Toledo, one in Dayton, and one in Kalamazoo. We also make parts for companies like a Stryker Medical, a Parker Hannifin. So we've diversified over the years. The bottle bill here, we are the ones that we have two facilities, and we do the pickup for over 600 of the stores here and do the sorting and a lot of investment. And I'll put in a plug. The system we have in Michigan, we are the gold standard for the country with how it works. And we also have a melting operation in Indiana, so we kind of vertically integrate. So that's kind of what we do. I have about 400 employees and very committed employees.
You know, Mark has been doing, and Shupan been doing recycling for a long time now. What used to be considered waste is now considered a commodity. But recycling at Michigan State is, and the Recycling Center, a bit newer than that, Jennifer. Tell us a little bit about the success of the Recycling Center, and then we'll get Mark's take on the MSU Recycling Center.
Oh, excellent. First, I want to give credit to all the people who have been able to do the work to bring the Recycling Center to where it is today. And we opened a new facility. It's a LEED Gold facility on our campus, and we have both the recycling operations and where we have sort lines, et cetera, and also our surplus operations there too, which promotes the reuse side of things. So MSU is very committed to recycling, and our recent data shows that we're diverting about 43% of the materials from landfill, which is green, and that's helpful, but then also reduces cost for the university as well. We have recycling containers in all of our facilities across campus, and we also do a lot with recycling and reuse education at the Recycling Education Center. We see a lot of school groups and classes and folks coming through the doors there. So recycling is a big deal, and we talk not only recycling but waste reduction and reuse so that we're really thinking about the best ways to use the materials that come through MSU.
Well, we are in a world where resources are finite, and the idea of recycling from a standpoint of the energy savings, it's something we have to do, and it is a worldwide. It's not just the U.S. or whatever. Certainly, the prices on the commodities worldwide are affected by, you know, is China growing? Is every day we look at the London Metal Exchange, and that really affects some of the things. And it's a little different than the day to day. I think what we've really learned, and I've seen over the years, if you want to have sustained recycling, there is a cost. If you have something where there's enough value, it automatically will get recycled. Mm-hmm. Now we have to say it's almost like saying, I think you're willing to pay for police protection because it's the right thing. Okay, do you want to do the right things for your environment? Now, some commodities, in order to do that, you'll have to support it. And I think we're seeing more and more that people, certainly given the opportunity, are willing to do that.
Well, let me talk about because I think part of MSU's approach has been sort of a balanced portfolio in recycling. We're recycling some things that are hot commodities, and therefore are profitable in the sense of the cost of pickup, processing, and moving out the door. And then we're recycling other things that are not as profitable in that sense. But you know, what we're sort of striving for is a balanced portfolio. And so that you just don't simply pick the winners, if you will, but that if we do enough recycling by growing volume, that we can essentially get to a near-balanced portfolio and then learn some things along the way with partners like you about how better to do it. Mm-hmm. So we're almost like a little demonstration site for communities.
Well, you've absolutely come a long way because I hear from our people how good the facilities are and the job that you do. For us in the industrial side, and we're doing exactly what you're saying, we have – when we pick up materials, or we are bidding on materials, and we have some companies, their scrap in a year is their profit for their company. So people sometimes don't understand that the margins are fairly narrow. But what we also do is when we go to the company, we say, okay, here, if we want to handle your expensive stuff, here's what we could do to help you, whether it be your corrugated, your plastics, what else can we show you that you can divert? And they're more than willing to do that. And if you see what's going on today in the world with the Walmarts of the world and whatever, you if you want to do business with them, you better be green and you better show you can be green. So in the long run, I believe it's good for all of us.
Right. So if we were having this conversation 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, in my sort of 10-year retrospective question, plastics obviously are something because of the bottle bill, mm-hmm. you've been able to show a world leadership position about how to handle that kind of stuff, and that's really been important. The price of metals over the past 10 years has sort of bounced up and down, but you've stayed the course through the ups and the downs of all of that. And so now and the technology has gotten a bit better in order to do that. So you and I are having this conversation 5-10 years from now, Jennifer, and we're talking about what kinds of changes would you hope for in either technology for recycling or other kinds of things that would make the world greener from the way in which you think about the recycling world?
One of the things that I've noticed, at least in our facility, is the sorting technology. So there are lots of different ways to bring materials into a material recovery facility and then to divide it up into the commodity areas to make, you know, to whether it's paper or plastics, et cetera. So what I notice is a lot of that stuff is done by hand. There are some facilities that can do it with different types of technologies, but that whole process, it would be interesting to see technologies develop to do that, whether so that either we could go to more, at least at Michigan State, more single stream recycling, sort better, get cleaner products so that when we send them off to our suppliers that they're getting a cleaner supply. And also thinking about...
And cleaner means higher value.
Yeah, cleaner, higher value.
Absolutely.
And some of the things that was on our wish list is working with our really excellent packaging program to think about what, as we collect these things, right now there are established streams for the commodities to go to, and they're made into different things. But are there other types of products we can start making with these commodities, and for those that we don't currently collect because we don't know what to do with them yet? So those are the couple areas that I'm really interested in for the future. I think we have some opportunity there.
Well, I think 5 years from now, obviously things change pretty rapidly. But it's going to be, again, how can we use these items in different ways than we ever thought? And are we going to decide if how much more important it is to use recycled rather than virgin materials? Mm-hmm. Are we willing to pay a little bit more to do that? And sometimes we will, and sometimes we won't be able to. For example, the PET, I look at when we started sorting things years ago. It was pretty much a hand operation. Now we have... For example, on the PET, we have two color sorting lines, one in Grand Rapids and one in Milford plant, and these are millions of dollars of investment, mm-hmm. but it does the job.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the technology and some of the MRFs today, the systems that the waste managements of the world or whatever have, a tremendous amount. And the thing is, they are certainly profit motivated, and so they're going to do everything they can to continue to get the most value. It is difficult sometimes, and there's debates over single stream and whatever. Unfortunately, sometimes single stream can contaminate certain things. But as time goes on, I think, again, some of the items that, I mean, for example, glass, here's an item that sometimes the transportation costs are greater than the value of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there some things that can be made in the future, whether it's, you know, using it for content and the roads or this or that, that gives it more value, which allows it to be recycled more. But I have no doubts in my mind, because every day people are saying, how can I use this differently? And again, with the major industries saying, we want recycled content, and if you want to sell to us, we want recycled content, can do nothing but get better.
You mentioned that for us, if I look at our recycling center, it's very small. It's an enormous equipment cost.
Mm-hmm.
For you, at the volume you're doing and the price of the machinery in your operation, it's an enormous equipment cost. So theoretically, the change in law on personal property tax for equipment capital should help a bit to make the economics work slightly differently, and if people really want to be green, it might encourage more of those, that changes the profit margin a bit.
I know we are always looking at what equipment, can we be more efficient, can we have a better product,
yeah.
Can it be, and we do, especially on the beverage side, I mean, we're buying material from all over the country,
yeah.
Where we will either broker or purchase just in aluminum containers over 100 million pounds this year. So we're always looking for, and that's why when we bought the melting, as I became part of the melting operation, it was another value add that we could do to take cans to melt state, and now it's going to the sheet mills. So again, trying to find another value add. But when you talk about investment, it is continuously invested. I feel like I don't know how long I'm going to live. What's it? I I plan on living forever, and so far I'm doing okay. But in order to ever pay for all the things we keep buying every year, I may have to live forever.
Yeah, because your equipment cost is extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. To get into the business today, I mean, really on a large scale, I look at how we started as a very, very small company. It's very challenging for anyone small to get in and to be able to compete because of those costs.
Right. And also because of your your leadership, your insight, you were able to ride through some pretty difficult economic times. And
what's that song? I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, James Taylor and I have.
Right. But coming out with not only sort of riding through that time, but also in a time where the environmental issues are coming more to the fore, so it made it worthwhile riding through that time.
Oh, I believe we have a great future. I think this is a great example of what we're talking about. Well, we just purchased an e-scrap company because the electronic scrap recycling, it fit the kind of things that we did. We wanted to bring more. We have 800 industrial plants. We have 12,000 companies we distribute aluminum to. Every one of those has e-scrap. Now, what we did is we bought a small company. A young man was 26 years old, had it for 3 years, just getting going. And again, it was a long story. It came out of Northwood University, their entrepreneur program, and where there was a scholarship that my son was actually named after my son. So it's just really, as you were saying, it's a
serendipitous
occurrence. But it's really exciting. Because we know it's going to grow, and this young man, it would take him on his own 10 or 15 years to go where he's going to go in 2 or 3 years because he's got the support financially, and we have a mentor for him. And so it's really exciting, and there are opportunities out there.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time here, but I'd like to thank Jennifer Battle, Director of Campus Sustainability at Michigan State University, and Mark Schupan. Mark, thank you so much for coming up from Kalamazoo to do this. We've been talking sustainability, and Jennifer, continued success with Campus Sustainability.
And Mark, we're so pleased not only you're partnered with Michigan State, but you're a Michigan-based company leading a global challenge. So thank you very much.
Thank you. This will always be our home. That's for sure.
Thank you, Jennifer, for your leadership.
Thank you. That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.